Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Turning Towards Life with Lizzie and Justin. It's Sunday morning, as usual, if you're listening live, and maybe you're listening on a podcast or some other way. And so it might be any time in the world, any year even. So as we record this, it's 2020. And this morning, for some reason, just saying hello to Justin quickly before we came on has made me feel very excited and very pleased to be here. It's a wonder that we do this, and I know I say that probably every week, but just having sprinted downstairs after feeding my little girl and managing to make a cup of tea and kind of getting here, it's just a really lovely thing that we do it, and we wouldn't do it unless we had the structure, and I'm so glad that we did decide to do this. I think it's over 2 years ago, is it, Justin? So it's been a really long time now, and it feels like a kind of staple part of certainly my family's practice as well, because in order for me to do this, lots of other things have to happen, and everybody knows this is what happens with me on a Sunday morning, and I'm very grateful to be supported in that and that the structure exists so that this does happen, and I'm really grateful to be here and loving this source. And of course I love Ursula Le Guin, so anytime we get to talk about her is a glory for me. And thank you, Justin, for choosing this. It's really wonderful.
You're welcome. Well, hello, everyone. Lizzie, it's been 2.25 years.
Oh my goodness.
We're 121 weeks in.
2.25.
2.25 years. And I'm just thinking, as you're talking about it, about this point that we've made very often about how practices change us. And one of the things that seems very clear to me is that doing this, just the doing of it, changes you and me. I know that's true, but... It also changes lots of other people. I mean, before everybody who listens, just that we do it exactly as you're saying. So my family know that we do this. And so the world changes because of the practice. And then I want to just give a little hello and thank you to the group who I worked with on listening on Friday morning just past, which began with some walking into the room, as I was just saying to you, Lizzie, and the first person to greet me saying that she listens to this podcast. So that was wonderful. But the second thing is that this source from this morning was really, the choice of it for this week was inspired by my work with them on Friday. We had such a moving, surprising conversation about what listening to one another might be. And I thought that Ursula Le Guin was fabulous on this. So before we read the source, just a reminder that you can always find the sources and the references to them if you're interested on the Turning Towards Life website, which is turningtowards.life. And if you're listening and watching this, you'll know that you can find us in lots of ways. But the way that I found out this week, Lizzie, is we happen to have an Amazon Alexa device in our house, and I asked it this week to play Turning Towards Life, and it did. So we show up there as well. So you can find us in lots of places these days. We started coming out of the speaker, Lizzie, so.
That's amazing, Justin. I don't have one of those things. And right. So I would never know that, but my mum and dad do. So I could go around to their house and just shout it.
You can say, Alexa, play Turning Towards Life, and we will magically appear out of the speakers.
Where does it come from out of there?
One of the podcast services that we are streaming ourselves onto.
Oh my God.
Plugged into there. Brilliant. And the other thing I just want to say to everyone is that many people have come to learn with us on our Foundations of Coaching program because of hearing about it on Turning Towards Life. And we have one in February that's completely full, but we now have one in May as well, on the 4th and 5th of May. And if you're interested in joining, I'm going to be leading that one, and you can find out about it on wearethirdspace.org, which is the website of Third Space from which all of this comes. And now, enough announcements. Time for our source. So this is from Ursula Le Guin's book. So Ursula Le Guin, as you know, Lizzie, was, she only died in the last year or so. She was the most fantastic writer of many different things, pioneering, beautiful, amazing use of language, incredibly deep engagement with lots of different cultures that she brought to her novels and her poetry and all of that. But she was also an essayist. And this is from a chapter of a book called The Wave in the Mind. it's a wonderful piece on the whole phenomenon of listening. And this is just two paragraphs from the middle of it. So I'm going to read it as we normally do. It's called Telling is Listening. Human communication cannot be reduced to information. The message not only involves, it is a relationship between speaker and hearer. The medium in which the message is embedded is immensely complex, infinitely more than a code. It is a language, a function of society, a culture in which the language, the speaker, and the hearer are all embedded. In human conversation, in live actual communication between or among human beings, everything transmitted, everything said, is shaped as it is spoken by the actual or anticipated response. Live, face-to-face communication is intersubjective. It is a continuous interchange between two consciousnesses. Instead of an alternation of roles, it is a continuous intersubjectivity that goes both ways all the time. People unite themselves and give each other parts of themselves, inner parts, mental, not bodily parts, when they talk and listen. Two people talking in this way form a community of two. People are also able to form communities of many through sending and receiving bits of ourselves and others back and forth continually through, in other words, talking and listening. Talking and listening are ultimately the same thing.
Okay, I'm going to read this again. Human communication cannot be reduced to information. The message not only involves, it is a relationship between speaker and hearer. The medium in which the message is embedded is immensely complex, infinitely more than a code. It is a language, a function of society, a culture in which the language, the speaker, and the hearer are all embedded. In human conversation, in live, actual communication between or among human beings, everything transmitted, everything said, is shaped as it is spoken by the actual or anticipated response. Live, face-to-face communication is intersubjective, a continuous exchange between two consciousnesses that goes both ways all the time. People unite themselves and give each other parts of themselves, inner parts, mental, not bodily parts, when they talk and listen. Two people talking in this way form a community of two. People are also able to form communities of many through sending and receiving bits of ourselves and others back and forth continually through, in other words, talking and listening. Talking and listening are ultimately the same thing.
The bit, Lizzie, that I wanted to bring out to start with, that has been so powerful for me, is right in the middle, where she says, in human conversation, in live actual communication between or among human beings, everything, and then she writes, if you can't see this, she writes this in quotes, transmitted, everything said, is shaped as it is spoken by the actual or anticipated response. So this is what I got into with working with this group on Friday, and I think it's such a big part of what we're doing, you and I, as we talk to one another week on week on week, which is that what's obscured to us often, I think, if we think about speaking as if mostly what is doing is that the information is going from me to you and then information is coming from you to me, it misses out so much, but particularly this part, which is that what it's possible for me to say is shaped by the kind of listening that you are. And it's also shaped by the kind of listening that I imagine you are. So there's both how you're actually responding to me. We do this fun exercise in the workshop that I did on Friday, where we just asked people to practice not listening to one another, to actually not listen to one another, and then find out what it was possible to say, not to play at not listening and not to role play, just not listen. And what people said was, I can't speak. I begin and I lose track of myself. I can't find the flow through my own speaking. I don't know that I make sense. I can't keep track of what's most important to me. I'm confused and disorientated. And it's such an amazing illustration for me that at the most profound and most subtle level, how we are with one another is what it makes it possible to speak. And then the stories we have about one another, which sort of come with how we are with one another, are also shaping what's possible to speak. And we think often that speaking is just, well, I'm just going to have things that are inside me are going to come out and they're going to go across the air and they're going to go into you and then they'll be in your mind. And it just seems to me that that's not really what it's like at all.
It's reminding me, Justin, I don't know if you've ever been at a kind of social gathering where you're talking to somebody and they're looking around at somebody better to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had that before where I'm talking to someone and I realize that they're actually like, it's like me, instead of looking at you now, kind of going like that, you know, thinking, is there someone better that I should be talking to in this party or wedding or wherever? And it just is such a, I'm remembering in my body now what a kind of awful, awful feeling that is, to be looked over or something, like as in if someone isn't listening to me, all kinds of things happen that mean I don't even want to be there anymore. I mean, that's quite a major example where someone literally doesn't want to be talking to me, but I know that feeling in my body of, as the speaker, of going, oh my God, I could be saying anything right now and it doesn't really matter. And there's actually no point in us facing one another and being aimed at each other, because nothing actually is happening here. There's no possibility for exchange. And funnily enough, that was exactly the sentence that I wanted to start with as well, if I had been going at that point in our conversation, because it feels like to realize that what you can say is shaped by your anticipation of me or your understanding of me and my responses is a huge thing, to know that it's not all on you to say what there is for you to say, because I'm involved in your saying of things. I'm as the listener, a determinant of what you say. And we think we're kind of powerless individuals who are separate, wandering around, trying to say our piece and communicate with people. And it's not the case. So for me, this is an example of a really grounded example of the concept of non-separateness. That, you know, we have a story that we are separate, and this really straightforwardly, and Ursula Le Guin writes it so beautifully, really straightforwardly tells us that we are not separate from one another. If we just take this little thing, which is you and me having a conversation, which is not a little thing, it's a huge thing really, as she's saying, it's a very complex, immensely complex thing that is between us that allows us to say the things we're saying and invites us to say the things that we will say. And it kind of sparks my imagination so wildly about what's true about being a human, and that this thing called relationship and the importance of you to me and me to you, and that extending into all relationships with everyone, is that both of our participation determines what the relationship is like. Both of our participation, whether we are silent or vocal or we're acting something or we're still or whatever, that interaction is wholly determined by both parties as to what's possible. And I love that is such a clear explanation. This is such a clear explanation of the nature of the non-separateness that exists between human beings. Mm-hmm. And on a very practical level, you know, I know that there are people in my life where I go, oh my God, I couldn't say that to them. No, couldn't do that. And then there are other people where I think, oh my God, this person is the person to say this to, because I know they're not going to think I'm completely weird, or, you know, that there are people who I will share my most tender places with and my most mad and my weirdest dreams. And because I know and feel their response is one of welcome and openness. And then other people, I really won't do that. And so, and again, but again, that's probably also my story about those people. And often my story is wrong. So I think, well, I can't say that to them. And then I'm brave enough to do it. And it's different than what I thought too. So it's not like I think I know what people's response is going to be. I think I have an imagination about what it's going to be. And sometimes that's accurate and sometimes it's not.
And it's, I'm enjoying the thought as you're speaking about the, it's like the being in a hall of mirrors aspect of this. So as we're speaking, how you are, Lizzie, your openness to me, your openness to yourself, your openness to our conversation, your openness to what might happen, for sure is shaping what I can say, as is my story and interpretation about your openness, as is your story about my story about your openness. And this is where we go on endlessly, I mean, in other words, that's a bit of a sort of a funny way of saying that it's both our actual bodily emotional reciprocity to one another is shaping it, as are all the stories that we have about what's going on, which of course is part of that. And I was thinking a lot, as I'm thinking a lot now, actually, as you said what you said about who we find we can bring what to, that this is one of the things that I think very often we forget, that's actually something that could be subject for any of us of a kind of practice, which is, what would it take for me to be the kind of person to whom people could speak?
Mm.
What kind of things can be brought my way and what can't? Who will talk to me about what? And I think this next part is so relevant for what we're doing right here, is to what extent do I try to, even as I listen, control where the conversation will go?
Mm.
'Cause so I'm aware, you know, really feel aware of this sometimes, that feeling of, I don't want this person to talk to me about this topic, because if you talk to me about this topic, I'll feel embarrassed, or I'll feel ashamed, or I'll feel whatever. And already before you speak, part of me is closing down to make sure that that doesn't happen. Right. So that's sort of one way. I don't want certain thing to, and it's not very much unlike looking over your shoulder at a party. You'll feel from me,
yeah,
all the subtle bodily things that come way, way, way before language about what's welcome and what's not. So really I'm asking a question of what does it take us to be, for us to be welcome, a kind of a welcome to what people will bring. But the other side of it is, I know this of myself, I can control what I don't want you to say, but also, and this is the bit that I'm more familiar with the feeling of in my own body, is I really want the conversation to go this way. I really want it. And with an endeavor like we're doing now, where we've got half an hour and we've got a topic and we might have all kinds of wishes for it, like that it's interesting or that we end up in a certain place, it would be really easy to try and shape this conversation. Like I'm trying to get you to speak in a particular way so I can then make the point that I want to make afterwards. And once we do that, this thing that Ursula Le Guin talks about, where we're shaping what one another can say, it seems to me that the end of that is we might get me where I want to get to, which is a kind of grasping and holding on. But the cost of it is everything else that could have happened, everything that you could be, everything that I could be that I don't even know is coming yet, is all constrained out of existence, and we're not even saying that that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing with one another. It's all kind of going on beneath the level of the spoken word.
Yes, I'm really, really taken by this way that we can control what is and isn't said by the way we listen. And I feel like that's such a big inquiry. I mean, a huge inquiry of how I'm controlling my spaces by what I avert people from saying just by being the way I'm being. How interesting just to see life in that way. But also I want to appreciate the thing that we're doing here. You know, in a way, like, it's making me feel like I don't know which way round everything is, like what comes before what. Because the fact that we do Turning Towards Life live is only possible because of the nature of relationship that we have, which is basically that I know that if I mess something up or if it's not perfect, that's completely fine. And it's not about that anyway. But it's like the nature of everything happened before Turning Towards Life to do with how much I trust you and you trust me means it's possible to do something live together. So the conversation is allowed to be this way, which is neither of us know where it's going to go. We have like a springboard, which is our source. But then we are genuinely responding to what each other says. And you had a starting point and I had a starting point that was most inspiring or in that moment jumped out mostly from the, which is a little bit of kind of directional sense for the conversation. And then it is this very trusting, responsive conversation that happens. And I'm just appreciating that that's, in a way, that's why it got born, because I think that's how we were talking on the train that time when we decided to do this, which was you said one thing and then I said another. And the kind of listening we were to each other was something that took us somewhere that neither of us knew about until it was spoken or something. Right. And I think that's what, if I reflect on it, had this get born, was because we did the thing. And then we thought, oh, but this can't just be for us. This is really interesting. This is really, like, we would like to listen to this if it was in the world. And then this thing happened. And so it's such an incredible thing to consider really the power of listening and what it produces in the world that wouldn't otherwise get produced, that wouldn't otherwise get made even. Because that's the foundational part. Like, if that's not happening, many, many things don't come to life that would otherwise come to life in terms of the potentiality of the fruits of a relationship, a space that's made from relationship.
It's what you're saying is reminding me of the second part of what Ursula Le Guin says, which is where she says that what's happening when we're in conversation is that bits of you are coming my way and entering into me, and bits of me are entering into you. She says we're exchanging parts of ourselves. And of course, if what I'm doing is trying very, very hard not to have certain parts of you come my way, which is the first thing we were talking about, then we're immediately constrained, even, and we have that feeling often of something's not happening. But when we're willing to trust, when I'm willing to be, another way of saying it is when I'm willing to be affected by you, well, I'm willing to let myself be surprised and to feel what I feel and to be changed by the encounter with you, because something of you, Lizzie, is coming into my world and into my experience and into my own sense of myself, then I'm changing, I'm letting myself be changed by the experience of being with you, and you are letting yourself be changed by the experience of being with me, and that's what makes this possible. And in order to do that, we have to practice trust. which is not, and I'm saying practice trust, not like trust as a thing that just exists, which I know it does. It's also true between you and I, but to practice trust, I think, is something like knowing that I really don't know what you're going to say. I don't know which way this is going to go. So there's one kind of trust where I can go, oh, well, Lizzie, I know what kind of things you're going to say, so I feel safe and we can do this, which has truth in it. But there's a much deeper kind of trust, which is you might say anything and we might find ourselves in territory that we completely didn't expect. And I might find myself feeling things that I didn't expect to feel or think things because you're coming my way and parts of you are now becoming parts of me and changing me. And when we do that, we make community. That's one of the things that Ursula Le Guin says, that's what it is to make community. It's not to sort of stand rigid apart from one another, looking from afar and going, oh, yes, Lizzie's over there. No, I have to let myself be changed by you. And, I can't remember the end of what it was. There was sort of an end of that thought about letting ourselves be changed by one another. I suppose the thought is that that's so different from the way that you might think about what communication is, like we're sort of throwing things towards one another from a distance, and that's not what it is. And also, I know what it was that so much of the ways in which we find ourselves far apart from one another is when we're not willing to do this, when we're not willing to let ourselves be changed by one another. And then I go, I won't let you near. I won't let what you have to say near. You might have very different opinions about an event that happened between us or something political. And as long as I'm making this act of closing down what I'm prepared to experience as you speak with me, or how I'm prepared to let myself change as you speak with me, as long as I'm doing that, we're not in community, really. We're not in relationship, really. Mm. We're just kind of yelling at one another from a distance.
Yeah. I feel really, when you were talking, Justin, just really moved by this exchange of parts and what a life is like when we go around allowing parts of you to live in me and to know that that's what's going on and accept that that's what's going on. So we are homes for each other. So I'm a home for parts of you that you wish to share with me, to exchange with me. And the kind of home that I am determines which parts of you you'd like a home for as well. And then as me, my home gets furnished with whatever I'm willing to have in my home, but that I walk around as that home, housing all of these exchanges. And the complexity of that is very huge and beautiful. But it's true when I look at my experience of me and you, of me and my family members, of me and the people I work with, the people I'm neighbors with, like the world of the people that I interact with and don't interact with, i.e. people in the world that I don't know personally, but that I learn from, that those parts do live in me, that my experiences happen inside of me. It's my world is filled with all of these things. And the more I exile parts of you that I don't want to live in me, the more unwelcome my home is to me too. So it's also like just bringing up that thing of, I can see that when I reject by my kind of way of being that determines what I'm willing to listen to or not, or what you say or not, when I reject parts and control what gets brought to me, that's a reflection of my home. This body, this willingness is limited in some way. And of course, it's limited in hundreds of thousands of ways about what's too scary or what's too... It's reminding me sometimes... So my husband loves the planets and he often plays Mars. And I find it so difficult to be present to Mars because it's so big and feels so violent to me. And he often says to me, listen, I think this is your work because it's so hard for you. Clearly there's something here that you need to be able to find more. I mean, he doesn't say these words, but my interpretation of his words is that I have to look to see if there's more spaciousness inside of me that I can hold that without feeling like it really hurts me somehow. And so I feel like there are so many ways that I hold out what feels unbearable or unacceptable to me and my narrative about what life is. And in a way, I'm controlling all the time what's okay to for anyone to say or do. I can just see it so clearly. And of course, there's ways that I'm very open, and I know that I'm a person to whom people bring many things. And I feel like it's one of those things that's a continuous, open-ended, there is no end to the way I'm controlling what's acceptable to me. And there's no end to how much I could continue to accept more and more and more. Feels like one of those things about life that is not a project. It's not a done thing ever. It's an ongoing, continual learning and deepening and widening of my awareness of the ways that I essentially try to feel safe in a mistaken way by controlling what's coming my way from other people and myself too.
I'm left as we come to the end, Lizzie, really moved by this idea that you're expressing, which is that there's a way that we can be home for one another, and that means being home for ourselves, and that as we practice the work of not, to pick up something we were talking about for the last couple of weeks, not exiling parts of ourselves, we also become more able to not to welcome and not exile parts of others as we're in this interchange where we're sharing parts with one another to and fro. And I know how often, how frequently with you, for me, it's a conversation with you is a place that I can be fully home in. And I'm thinking about other people I know. There's magical people we come across now and again where we know that we can, all of us is welcome. And just the act of somebody listening in that way before they even speak makes so much possible. If we pay attention, we can feel it. And so it leaves me wondering, dedicated to and keeping on being curious and interested in, what does it take? What kind of self-protection do we have to give up? What kind of trusting do we have to do in order to be able to listen so that our consciousnesses can go both ways in the way that Ursula Le Guin is inviting us to. Mm. Well, thank you so much as always for this conversation. And thank you everybody for joining us, all of you who join us in this 121st week. And all being well, we're going to be back next Sunday, and on YouTube and on Facebook and on all the various podcast platforms and on Alexa and all of these exciting places that we show up. All right, everybody.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye-bye.